welcome to DNF One. Hello and welcome to DNF One. This is our end of season review. I've got with me Derek O'Connor and Paul Higgins. Say hello.
Hello.
Hello, how are we?
And today we're going to be covering off, first of all, just quickly, the aero changes for 2021. Seeing as we're not changing to the new shiny bright cars that are going to save Formula One, and it's been shifted a year for obvious reasons, there is some rule changes come through for 2021. We'll run through them. We'll talk through the tracks that are actually on the calendar for next year, if that all goes ahead. We've got 23 dates, because we don't have 23 tracks yet. We're still waiting on a gap to be filled, and if Saudi Arabia finish their track, and so on and so forth. And then we're going to go through each of the teams, and we'll look at their lineup for next year, as well as the performance this year. And at the very end, we'll be asking Paul, myself, and Derek for our 2021 end of season headlines. How is that going to shape up Bottas for the championship, etc., etc.? So, first of all, guys, the real changes that are happening for this upcoming season is to reduce the downforce by about 10%. So, it's things like the floor, the diffusers, and the brake ducts are being adjusted. That sort of floor area, where you usually see a lot of fins and holes and gaps and stuff that feed the air through the back and over the rear tyres and stuff. All of that's been cut away. So, now we've actually got a flat floor that's got less flex in it, and it should reduce the downforce going towards the back of the car. The diffusers in the rear of the car have been reduced in height down to 50mm is the maximum. The winglets and the brake duct on the lower half can be no wider than 80mm. And we've seen some of the teams, McLaren as far back as Belgium, were actually running one of these floors in test preparation. Red Bull and Ferrari have also been seen running these things at various different Grand Prix since Belgium to try and actually get a handle on the changes with the budget cap and everything that's coming in and stuff. These teams are always trying to get ahead of the game. The real changes on the aero side, reducing it by 10%, is allegedly to slow the cars down. They obviously gain these percentages over the space this season, and we'll do the same this year. We also have some other changes to do with the weight. The car's 3 kilograms heavier, so the I know that's a big difference, but it's 3 kilograms heavier is the minimum weight. But one which is more interesting is the power unit is going to be 150 kilograms, which means that teams aren't having to go with exotic alloys and stuff like that. So that should save on some of the costs. Whether that makes a difference to the engine performance or not, I'm not too sure. It is all aimed at reducing costs. The engine modes, we know about the party modes gone. That's obviously not so much to reduce costs, but that was to try and rein in Mercedes, but it hasn't really worked. DAS is gone, and also the FIA have now actually said to the teams that they can use natural fibres, so bamboo, cotton, flax, hemp and linen can actually be used within the car. The crash structure at the front, there's some companies out there have actually built and tested crash structures that basically conform to the same as carbon fibre, but they are heavier. They're about 40% heavier. However, they're a lot cheaper, they're a lot more sustainable, and when they actually take damage, they don't turn into shards that'll cut tyres. No oil burning. These seem like pretty much standard sort of ways forward to stop people cheating.
Basically, anything Ferrari was doing that wasn't legal, they're going to do away with.
Well, that must be a record for how quickly Derek's brought Ferrari into the equation.
That's only because I was talking. It does actually mean, Derek, that from the start of this season, they'd already actually started using 2 fuel sensors on the back of the Ferrari issues. So that was obviously deemed Ferrari's way out. And then also to stop a repeat of the Trace and Point scandal, which enveloped the sport. Not that anybody really cared too much apart from Renault. Listed parts and stuff, the teams can't take 3D photography, they can't scan body parts and then reproduce them. They can, however, reference pictures and video footage, but they must then show the FIA a full learning process from we developed it here, we had this idea, we saw it in this car, and this is how we developed it through. So they can't cut corners, and whether that'll make a difference or not, I'm not entirely sure. Most of them are going to be working on the 22 car now. We're not seeing any other cars out there, and how much development they can do within this off-season, I'm not too sure. But that's the brief overview of what the main changes are. There's things like the exhaust and stuff where the at the moment, you know, they've got that sort of Disney thing where they've got two exhaust ports and a main exhaust. Some of them are wastegates. The teams can do away with them to reduce costs on the exhaust, and they can reduce the cost of producing the exhaust assembly by making it actually just simpler to produce. So there is a lot of things in there that are actually designed to make it more sustainable, give the teams a more even playing field so that there's less advantages, party modes and fuel types, and the introduction of the hemp, cotton and these crash structures, and trying to do away with carbon fibre is a direction that Formula One want to go to make it more environmentally friendly, I guess.
One thing I want to say about that, they're trying to reduce the speed. They're trying to reduce the speed equally on all of the cars, so it's just really going to be the same. There's not going to be much difference. If they're doing that to everybody, it's just going to be that Mercedes will be at the front, albeit 10 mile an hour slower. And I thought, I really don't understand what the advantage of slowing everybody down is. It won't make for overtake any easier. Why are they slowing the cars down? I don't understand that. They're making them go slower. I thought this was all about speed. I thought that that's what Formula One, the fastest cars with the best drivers in the world. And now they're saying, oh, well, we better slow them down. But they're slowing them all down equally, so it's going to make no difference.
The FIA did say that it was to actually help protect the tyres, but we're getting Pirelli who are bringing in heavier tyres that have got better or stronger walls and stuff and so on. So for the point of view that they say that, you're right, Derek, that provide stronger tyres and we can race them harder and quicker. But the other thing, Derek, as well, as you mentioned there, it's going to affect everybody. However, it won't, because the teams that have got the better aero, the wind tunnels and so on and so forth, that have got better money management and these resources, are going to improve quicker. Now, this season, because of the way that they've finished, they do have the aero handicap coming into play. How much a difference that will make? Because this car at the end of the season is done. It's in the bin. So the question then becomes, fine, you've got extra time to work in the aero, but some of the teams, I mean, Haas already said last season that they weren't going to work on the aero of the car. They weren't going to work on the car in any way, shape or form, because it was a pointless exercise. It was just going to cost them money. So I completely agree with you, Derek. Paul, your thoughts on it? Do you think it's a bit of a dead end what they're trying to do here?
I think Derek's spot on in what he says. At the end, if you're trying to make a level playing field, why make all the cars slower doesn't make any sense. And let's face it, it's not going to make a massive difference to the outcome of next season.
No.
As you said, the bigger teams are still going to be on top regardless. And these changes, you're not suddenly going to see a Williams up challenging at the top of the pack. So, I think it's just but a waste of time.
It feels like it's, I get the point, obviously, the fuel side, the party modes, changing of the style of carbon fibre and trying to move away from that, make it more sustainable. I get that, I understand that. But slowing the cars down, as Derek said, it seems to defeat the purpose of it being Formula One. But what the FIA do is they say it's for safety, and then they can change whatever they want, hoping that it'll change the sport to make it a closer racing. And none of it's going to do that. Nothing's going to do that. It may reduce the amount of wash going off the back of the car, but the wash that's gone off the back of the car now or with the new aero is still just as bad that the cars aren't going to follow. There might be a second that they'll improve and get closer and still have a wee bit more downforce, but nothing it'll make absolutely no difference. I think it's a waste of time. Yep.
I know this is sort of old sort of thinking, but if they handicapped the front cars by putting more weight in them to slow them down and allow the cars at the back to be lighter so that they would close up, that would work. But equally handicapping all the cars doesn't work, does it?
What you said there, Derek, that would level the playing field. Which is what they're saying they're trying to do, but they're not going to accomplish that by making every car go slower. Yeah, it's just going to be exactly the same. And to protect the tyres, at the end of the day, just let the teams manage the tyres. Just let them get on with it.
See, there's a couple of options for Formula One, and the first one is to use ballast to slow down the cars at the front. But the problem always was that when Merck was spending $400 million and Williams is spending $125 million, it was unfair to penalise the teams for spending more money. But that was part of the problem with Formula One. Now they've brought in the budget cap and the aero, it should bring everybody closer together. However, it's how long before it actually gets to that point. Now, the rule changes, the magic bullet, 2022, we're all hoping. However, there's still this financial question mark over how much the teams have actually been spending on and how far out. I mean, the teams that actually can do it, Mercedes, Ferrari, maybe your Red Bull, have been throwing money probably at the 22 car for the past year in one way, shape or form, either hidden or otherwise. But those teams will come in with cars that have had a lot more preparation, maybe than the Haas and Williams. And the field may become closer together. But putting ballast in the cars works fine in series where the cars are equal, kind of to start with. There's such a gulf between the front and back in Formula One in terms of the cars that even putting ballast in there maybe isn't the right way forward. They have to actually do it. I still think ballast would actually be a good idea, but once we hit 22 and the cars get this sort of overall, all the cars are the same or similar, and then use ballast at that point. Yeah. But then all the teams that spend extra money cry foul, and it would maybe make some of the teams leave the sport. We've seen Red Bull. Red Bull have threatened to pull out and this, that, and the next thing when they get their way and stuff.
Oh, Ferrari, haven't they?
Yeah, Ferrari as well. I mean, it's just they need to realise that the sport needs to be equal for everyone that's in there. And okay, the hands have been forced because of the crisis in Formula One, as is the rest of the world at the moment. The hands have been forced. But again, the past 30 odd years, this issue keeps rearing its head. We've never had a situation where the teams could agree on these things because Ferrari would always veto it, you know? But yes, again, this becomes a rant because it's something that we've looked at and seen for years and nothing's been done about it. And Liberty Media's finally come in, and to a certain extent, Liberty Media's come in and actually done something by changing the rules on the cars to make them be able to race closer. But again, they don't want to touch ballast because they're scared of teams to leave. And the answer to that is have more teams in Formula One.
This whole problem with the wage caps and financial fair play stuff, you get it, like they've tried it in football. And the bigger teams still find a way to get around it.
Yeah.
And even when they get caught breaking rules, the punishment they get is ridiculous because they're scared that these bigger teams will leave. So how did F1 get around that? At the end of the day, if teams like Merck, Ferrari, Red Bull start threatening them, well, we'll just pull out, they're not going to allow that to happen. It's never going to be a level playing field. It's never going to happen.
No. I mean, they have the steps of all the cars moving to these new rules in 22. All we can do is hope that that fixes Formula One. And it will also hopefully fix some of the tracks, because some of the tracks at the moment are absolutely dire that we go to. And maybe actually when the cars race closer, a track like Sochi all of a sudden will become a far better track. Barcelona, who knows? That remains to be seen.
The rules, yeah, they've got to do them. And I know what they're doing and I know what the sort of thinking is behind it. But I just don't think they're going far enough to make it a more level playing field. I think they're trying things, but they're doing it. They don't want to offend anybody at the top end, and they don't want to give anybody at the back end more advantage. So that, you know, yeah, they just got to bite the bullet and do it. I think that's the crux of it. If the FIA suddenly went, right, we're going to do this, hard luck. You know, if you don't like it, you know where the door is. Oh, but we can't have Ferrari walking away. We can't have Mercedes walking away. Mercedes are talking of pulling out anyway because they're going all electric anyway. So they're not interested in the petrol development anymore. Yeah, all right, the next 10 years maybe, but it's definitely going the way of the electric. So but they just need to be more brave to the FIA and stand up for what they want.
Completely agreed, Eric. Yeah, I mean, do you know what the easiest fix is? When they said about the 22 cars, they should have said, right, okay, this is the aero. Everybody has the same aero. We let all the teams get together. You design what is the best aero for every car. Your wheel base will be the same. Everything will be identical car to car. You can change your engine, but we'll make sure that the power in the engine by adjusting the boost pressure on the turbo or whatever it is, all those engines will output the same amount of power, how drivable they are, etc. That varies depending on how you've designed your engine, but you will have the same power available and have a... You've all got the same money to spend, etc., etc. And that's the only thing we can say for 22 is... I mean, this season coming up, 21, we'll get to it, but I can't see it being any different. The overall result is going to be the same as what we've had this year. We mentioned there, obviously, some tracks. The track schedule for 2021 is preliminary at the moment. We're obviously going to wait on certain countries may have different ideas as we get close, depending on what happens with the pandemic, vaccine, etc., etc. But as it stands at the moment, with or without fans, we'll be going racing on March 21st in Australia, Albert Park, March 28th, Bahrain, April 11th, China. We do have a space April 25th, which was going to be the Vietnam Grand Prix. However, due to, well, let's be honest, corruption in the country, I think all they have is one grandstand and one bend of a track. So I have no idea how it was ever going to run when they planned it initially. The great countries that have got poor infrastructure, they've got corruption throughout the government. They go to countries based around what they can pay Formula One and promise that they'll pay millions to Formula One to host a race, thinking it'll improve their economy. Whereas in actual fact, they've got such a large percentage of their population living in poverty. Instead of spending $200 or $300 million trying to get a Formula One track up and run, how about you actually feed your populace, improve the infrastructure, drainage, sewage, all these different things? No, no. We want a Formula One track. So that space April 25th, it looks like the FIA is looking to fill that gap with one of the tracks that we're at. So Turkey, Imola, Portimao, Mugello. Portimao seems to be the obvious one because we've got Spain just thereafter on May 29th. It'd be good for logistics. Turkey would be the other option, but I don't think Imola or Mugello would be the other option because we're already going to Italy. So why not have Portugal back in the calendar? And Portimao is a great track.
I agree, totally. I mean, some of the tracks we've had this year have been brilliant. And the key factor was the unknown element.
Yeah.
Nobody had raced there. Nobody had done out. They didn't have computer simulators. That's what we needed. That's what was supposed to be the X factor, and that helped. Yeah, more variety, less practice. I think more races, but less practice. Yeah, definitely.
Derek, the other thing about obviously these tracks is that when we go to them, you're right, we've got obviously Friday practice. We did see in Germany, just purely logistics, we had lost a day due to weather. At other tracks, when we went to Imola, we lost a day because of logistics getting there. But maybe is that the better option? Keep in mind that fans go and they watch obviously FP1, FP2, their support races. So having Friday there to squeeze it all in, if they have other races going on, it's maybe something that's still required. But there's nothing to say. If they have fans there, they need to give them something to watch on the Friday. Otherwise, they make it just the weekend, but they'll reduce the ticket prices. So there's a question mark over the finances for circuits on whether having that extra day or not is actually viable.
Yeah, but hang on. But if you say they're charging, this is only hypothetical, but say they're charging £100 for 3 days, and then they go, well, hang on, we'll actually just charge £80 for 2 days. They're going to make more profit out of it with less input from themselves, you know. And yes, they can have two races on the Saturday. They can have a practice. They can have quali. They can have an F2 and an F3 race. They've got the W series they've got to slot in. They're putting more and more races in there, but they don't want to pay for people to be there 3 days, for staff, for marshals, for teams being there. They're trying to reduce the cost, so they'll take it down. But ticket prices, they'll not drop them so much. They'll drop them a bit, but you watch, it would cost you more to go to 2 days than it would cost you to go to the 3 days.
Well, there's also merchandising and food and all the rest of it. Paul, your thoughts on...
Surely for the track owners are going to want that extra day because, like you say, once people are in through the gates, they're spending money. So they'll not want to lose that.
Track-wise, Paul, would you prefer to see Portimao reappear on the calendar?
I'd like to see Portimao. I also enjoyed Turkey, but I don't know how much that was down to new track conditions and the street sweeper going around cleaning it.
They spent millions.
Made that...
Oh, that was the fastest thing into turn one.
Yeah, exactly.
It was the only thing that made it round turn one.
Facing the right way. I think Portimao's got to be the sensible option for fitting it in for where they go after.
The thing is, Portimao is actually used for the Le Mans series, the LMP1s, 2s, and the GT3 series. All race at Portimao as a... Every year they're there, and they love the track. And I think Formula One actually appearing at Portimao this year, it finally got a big tick on the calendar for the fans that hadn't seen the track before. But I think Portimao's the no-brainer. Turkey was good, but I think just logistically, coming from China, they get into Portimão into Portugal, then Spain's the next step on May the 9th. Monaco just down the road, May 23rd. And then we're away at Azerbaijan, June 6th. Canada, June 13th. France, June 27th. Then mark that date in your calendar. There's no point. That'll be a crap race, regardless of what they do. July 4th, we're back to Austria. And then we've got Silverstone, July the 18th. Hungary and August the 1st. And then we hit the mid-season break, which is August the 1st to August the 29th. Is the first half of the calendar actually goes, depending on what races go ahead. I suspect all of them should go ahead. I don't know how Monaco will work from a spectator point of view, because there'll still be people actually flocking into the area because they can stay in their apartments and things like that. But the first half of the calendar, apart from probably France, maybe Azerbaijan, it's an okay track, but nothing outstanding. I think it's a good start to the calendar. Do you think we'll see fans at these races? I mean, some of the countries have got a better handle on it than others. Australia said they'll have some fans. We saw it in Bahrain. Bahrain might have some fans.
The situation had improved for a while, and we did see some fans, but I think going on what's happening just now, I can't see it. I can't see it.
The question, Paul, would be, we watch Formula One on the TV, and the fans, when they're in the circuit and a race driver's gone round the track, unlike football where they're very close and it's very much in your face, when it comes to Formula One, do you think the drivers, I get that, because a driver will always turn around and say, oh yeah, it's great when we have the fans here, but overall, do you think fans affect the performance of a driver going round the track?
No.
Yes.
You do? No.
Yes. You ask somebody like Nigel Mansell, right? Winning the British Grand Prix on you look at Alonso in Spain. You know, you just have to, they get an extra mile an hour out of them people cheering at them down the throats. It's the same as football, same as everything. In football, the fans are the 12th man. Same in Formula One, especially when it's your home Grand Prix. Yeah, they are an extra man in your team.
Home Grand Prix, I will give you that, Derek. Out with home Grand Prix, when Lewis Hamilton goes to Azerbaijan, do you think he's, thank goodness the crowd's here to cheer me on?
No.
I think the only time you notice the crowd at any Grand Prix will be before the race and after the race. During the race, they're not looking at the crowd.
I mean,
they're not even considering that there's a crowd there.
Yeah.
You know, football's different because, like you said, the crowd are closer, you're there. You're not screaming past them at 200 miles an hour. So, I don't think, during a race, I don't think the crowd make any difference.
You know what they could do? Is they could just get cardboard cutouts and just fill the stands with cardboard cutouts.
And play the noise.
They did that in American football. They had them all sat on the chairs. Your face on a cardboard cutout, you could actually get yourself put there. Cost you a small fortune, you know, just to have your face on a cardboard cutout.
I wouldn't mind that if the money was going to a charitable fund as opposed to the back pocket of Formula One, who I think make enough money off of broadcasting rights and merch and so on and so forth that they should be doing more along those lines, and they shouldn't be screwing circuits to PX, Y and Z to actually appear on the calendar. Moving into the second half of the season, if all goes according to plan, we'll have August 29th, we'll get back to Spa. And then September 5th, Zandvoort, we're going to obviously the Dutch track. It was set up for spring the year past, or it was set up for spring, and it's now taken up a sort of September slot for 2021. Then September 12th, Monza. September 26th, Russia and Sochi. Another one you can mark your calendar for no giving a crap about. October 3rd, Singapore. October 10th, Japan. I'm looking forward to going back to Japan, Suzuka. Although I'd like us to go to the Fiji track from time to time. It'd be good if they swap between them. October 24th, USA, back to Texas. October 31st, Mexico. And then we've got November the 14th, Brazil, Sao Paulo, which has signed a five-year contract now. The people that were involved before, Formula One didn't like them and didn't like how they did things. I think because they were associated to Bernie Eccleston, to be perfectly honest. But now they've got a new promoter, and Formula One has been happy to sign with him. Nothing to do with the fact that the track they were going to build was going to destroy thousands of acres of forest, and Lewis Hamilton said it's a bad idea, etc., etc. Nothing to do with that. It was just we didn't like the guy that was doing it. November 28th, Saudi Arabia. We race as one. And then December 5th, Abu Dhabi, another one where we race as one. And back to Yas Marina for the another race that even if it was a title decider, part of me would be like, what's the point of watching this goddamn race? Because it's one of those tracks. That's the calendar. Whether it all goes ahead or not, I'm not 100% sure. Nobody is. I think actually, to be honest, if we talk about it as no fans at the circuit, the teams and the bubble seem to be a workaround. It seemed to be a working situation. As vaccines are coming through, some of these teams may be able to purchase vaccine and vaccinate their team members, and it might make it easier. We might see fans at some of the tracks in limited numbers, depending on who each country is doing. But as an overall calendar, we're moving up to what is 23 races this season. Formula One want to move towards 25. Do you think we've got too much Formula One? Is this too many races? Taking out the team members and all that, as a fan, do you think you'll get Formula One fatigue watching all these races? Or are you like, let's have 25. Let's have 28 races this season. I'm happy to watch as much Formula One as possible.
I think we mentioned this before in one of the earlier podcasts that it becomes quantity over quality for me. I mean, even in next year's schedule, there's races that you've mentioned it yourself that I'd like to see just scrapped. So I think if you've got quality tracks, I think it's all right. But I think when you're putting in tracks that are just rubbish, there's no point.
Paul, would you say, I mean, it's part of the problem there is I agree with you. We've got to have good races when we go to these tracks. But like football is another analogy. Sometimes you watch a match and it's a 0-0 draw and it says, you walk away from it thinking, what was the point? And in Formula One, some of the races can be the same. And I think, unfortunately, the FIA is trying to manufacture it so that every race is an exciting race, which we all want. However, it's impossible to manufacture that. But I agree with you. I think some of the tracks do not lend themselves to good racing. I then turn around and say, well, 2022 will be the litmus test. We get to the end of the 2022 season and we say, right, France was still a crap race, regardless of what we've done to these cars. Do you think we should actually be changing out some of these tracks? If a track produces a poor race, should the FIA say, you know what, we hold the right in the reserve to say, this track is not cutting it for us this season. Next season, we're going to go to a different track. Because that's what the fans will want.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think yes, all right, give them this year. Let them do what they've done with the calendar. But please take note of the races that everybody goes, that was a snooze fest. I mean, even the commentators at that last race of the season were complaining it was boring, right? Yeah. I mean, if they're doing that, God help us, you know. I mean, if they're doing that and saying this race is boring, you know, these are the people that are supposed to be able to make an exciting of a hedgehog crossing the track. We definitely need to see some new bits, new tracks, even if they just say, okay, we've had an idea, we're going to reverse the track and set it up so that you can go the wrong way around it and make it more exciting. You know, anything like that. I know we've said about corners and barriers and everything being in the wrong place because they're doing left-handers, which would become right-handers. I know that, and I guess all that. But they have to do something, you know.
Well, Turkey was happy to spend millions to resurface the track. So certainly the money's within the business to actually do that. Because let's be honest, if somebody turns around and says, we're going to go to Hungary, but we're going to reverse the track, you'd be like, oh, that's interesting. And it might cost them a couple of million. But I know what you're going to say there, Derek. France has got like 128 layouts. We saw it in Bahrain. Abu Dhabi, they've got other layouts that they can use on these tracks. So if we go to these tracks and they can adjust the layout of the track, then why don't they? You're right, maybe reversing the tracks, maybe too much, maybe spend, etc., etc. Silverstone's a prime example. It'd be a great track to reverse, but it's not feasible. But with the right amount of money, it becomes feasible. Formula One is flush with cash, and they seem to keep talking about it as if they aren't. I think some of the tracks aren't flush with cash, but that's between them and Formula One. Paul, would you agree with Derek there, changing the layouts of tracks? Is that the fix, or is it a case of we just need to go to different tracks and see how it goes?
I think they should be trying everything they can, and if that's a possibility, then why not?
Yeah, yeah.
Just, you know, look at the second Bahrain race.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It was really exciting. It was brilliant to watch. So why can't they do things like that more often?
They're called ovals, and they have them in America by the bucketful. They could go anywhere in America.
I wouldn't mind, actually, one race in the season on an oval. They go to, I mean, go to Daytona and race round that track. Just for a change, if it's a crap race. Because the problem is all the cars will be 2x2 on it. I get that. But until the aero changes, maybe in 22, something like that. But what they should do is they should put it. Formula One's all about fan interaction, et cetera, et cetera. Let's put 50 tracks up for fans to vote on. And the top 25 of the 25 we go to. Russia will probably wind up with 100% of the vote somehow. Or maybe Saudi Arabia. It'll be a 50-50 and no other track. We'll have to race there for 25 races.
And in America, they'll find a sack full of votes the day after. You know, they'll have to count them.
We've got 2 million votes here for Texas, guys. But they're all about fan interaction. Or even put it to the drivers. If they don't want to put it to the fans, put it to the drivers and the teams. Each team picks 4 tracks. You know, something like, well, that's maybe too many.
40 races a year.
I tell you, Derek, that's where they want to go. The Liberty Media isn't, it goes back to what Paul says, it's quantity over quality, and I think Liberty Media think that that's the fix. But if they can bring that razzmatazz to each race that we actually go to, they've said that they want each weekend that Formula One race to feel like a Super Bowl final. Which is fine if you're a fan in that area. But for us, we don't see any of the build-up, et cetera, et cetera. We're just tuning in for a race. And I don't know whether race fatigue would be part of it. Doing podcasts, actually, for 28 weekends over the space of the season, maybe with work and everything, it'd be too much. I mean, to be fair, on that calendar, there's probably only about, let's be honest, track-wise, maybe, I mean, even Spain, they go there for tests, and why then go back to that track? Azerbaijan, it's all about money. France, change the layout. Russia, Sochi, that's just a...
car park.
Singapore, it's all about money. You see, Abu Dhabi, Saudi Arabia, it's just money, money. Mexico's even a question mark over how good the track is to race. There's certainly 6-7 tracks in there that should be dropped from it. Even China. China's okay, but again, I know we're there for money as opposed to the actual racing. But you're right, Derek. I think actually going back to some of these tracks, Monaco, could you imagine Monaco reversed? Because there's Armco's everywhere. Let's be honest. That track, it doesn't matter what way you run it.
It's a scale electrics track.
Yeah. The same problems are going to apply whatever way you run it. However, some people see Monaco's a boring track.
Can you imagine coming through the tunnel and then going up the hill?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Come on, Formula One, listen to some of the fans. We know better.
We know what we're talking about.
Exactly. So if you're listening to Formula One, we've gave you all the answers. Now, this concludes the first half of today's podcast. So join us in part 2, where we'll be discussing the teams, new driver lineups, the end of 21 season headlines, favourite tracks, tracks we're looking forward to, and driver of the year. This has been a Beer Cat production for DNF1.